In your world, people are used to fighting for resources, like oil or minerals or land. But when you have access to the vastness of space, you realize there's only one resource worth fighting over. Even killing for. More time.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory. My name is Eric. I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to the panel for episode 3. I have Rich with me.
I'm here.
Vanessa.
Hey.
Jason.
Hello.
And the kid.
Hello, party people.
Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. It's really great to see you guys. We watched a doozy this week. We're going to go ahead and talk about this. This is only our third time out of the gate with Exposition Street, and we've been trying to pick movies that we knew not only would be kind of diverse and show some different stuff with each episode, because we want to cover geek and cult movies, but we want to cover a lot of flavor, you know, if we can, and a different feel, different style. And I think we've done pretty good so far. Wouldn't you guys agree? This is definitely...
three very different films.
Definitely a shift.
Yes, right.
Today we're talking about Jupiter Ascending. This was released by Warner Brothers February 6th, 2015. Only hit number 3 at the box office, $18.3 million behind American Sniper and SpongeBob, which took $55 million that weekend and destroyed Jupiter Ascending's chance of being anything but a box office bomb. Rated PG-13, runtime of 2 hours and 7 minutes for the runtime. A young woman discovers her destiny as an heiress of intergalactic nobility and must fight to protect the inhabitants of Earth from an ancient and destructive industry. I think that pretty much wraps it up. I'm really looking forward to getting your guys' opinions on this, because show of hands, how many people, again, was this the first time watching this movie?
I watched it.
So our audience, of course, can't see that. But the point is, Rich and I were the only ones who'd even seen it. And Rich was like, I watched maybe part of it. So
I thought I remembered more than I remembered, but I remembered less. I'm like, oh.
Dude, I, no surprise to anybody, enjoyed this film. We're going to get into it. So written and directed by the Wachowskis. I can't remember how it's pronounced, but they're kind of famous for the fact that they did a little thing called The Matrix. And they also are the ones responsible for Cloud Atlas, written, directed Cloud Atlas. They're the brain children behind Sense8, which is one of the coolest TV shows that's come out in the last decade. Thank you, Rich, for bringing me on board with that one. Also, if you guys haven't watched it, I very much recommend it. Also, they wrote V for Vendetta, Speed Racer. I guess you can't win them all.
Oh, Speed Racer. That's one of my favorites. I love Speed Racer so much.
Okay. To be fair, I haven't seen it. I hated the cartoon so much that I couldn't bring myself to. But knowing that they directed it and wrote it, or wrote it at least, I think I'd be willing to. Interesting little thing about, do you guys know that the V for Vendetta and the Speed Racer, they wrote as the Wachowski brothers. They are, Lily and Lana? They're both trans women who have revealed that since that time, obviously. So
Matrix was also the Wachowski brothers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, now they're just referred to as the Wachowski.
Yeah, that was the way to do it, probably, obviously. Music by Michael Giacchino. I can't say enough about him. I could say a little more about this one, but that's okay. Not maybe his best score, in my opinion, but definitely really good. It fit the tone of the movie very nicely.
I'd say it was well done for the feel of the movie.
I was pretty happy. Just the high points real quick. Channing Tatum. Definitely a high point in the movie. I forgot to look at the beginning and the opening credits to see who had top billing, because he and Mila Kunis were showing in different orders. Okay. In different places I saw it. Because obviously Mila Kunis was the star, or the lead role, rather, you know, Jupiter. But Channing Tatum, I think, had a little more star power at that point. Definitely had a little more star power at that point.
Well, was that one before or after Magic Mike?
After Magic Mike. Yeah.
That'll do it.
He'd done 22 Jump Street 2014, so he's coming off of that. White House Down was the year before that. And like Magic Mike and G.I. Joe, the second G.I. Joe movie, in which he was, I think, axed in the opening credits for all intents and purposes, were like 2012. So, I mean, he definitely was on the rise. Magic Mike's XXL and The Hateful Eight were the same year as this. It'd give you kind of an idea where he was sitting. Mila Kunis, best known as Meg Griffin from The Family Guy.
Best known?
Or Jackie in that 70s show.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Best known. Yeah. As that set for that 70s. Yeah, you're right. I meant best known in terms of like now.
Yeah.
But you're right. Mila was also in Oz the Great and Powerful in 2013, which we might want to put on the list at some point. It's not a great movie. but it was good.
I never saw that one. It looked interesting, but I've never seen it.
It is a matter of opinion.
It is visually fantastic, and Mila Kunis chews the scenery horribly in that film as the wicked freaking witch. Eddie Redmayne.
Wait, Mila Kunis is the evil witch?
Yeah, worth it.
Okay.
Eddie Redmayne. My God.
Love him.
I don't even know where to begin. This was the year after The Theory of Everything, for which he won an Academy Award. This was, I mean, a year before he played Newt Scamander. So, I mean, this was his high point in his career was going on right here. This was, you know.
It was such a weird role for everything I've seen him in. And like, he's always been like the soft-spoken good guy. Oh, yeah. He did a fantastic job.
And I liked him in Les Mis. He played Marius in Les Mis. So. Let's see. Sean Bean. I guess he's worth mentioning. You know, this dude has 117 acting credits in IMDb, and I think he died in 116 of them.
Yeah.
I'm joking, obviously, but the exaggeration seem terribly inappropriate.
I actually waded through the credits because I was sure there had to be an after credit scene that featured the death of Sean Bean.
Right. Yeah. No, and it wasn't there.
I actually read an article that he now has it written in his contracts that his characters aren't going to be taken out because of so many things about him always playing characters that die.
Game of Thrones killed it for him, man. People looked at him. Killed. Yeah, I know. People looked at that, and by the time Game of Thrones first season came out and everybody saw Sean Bean was playing Ned Stark, whom anybody read the book knew how tragically he bit it at the end of the first book. Spoilers. My God. Everybody knew. So everybody either knew he was going to die or as soon as he was cast, knew he was going to die. If they hadn't read the book, you know, it's like that was the ultimate end of that comedy.
On the other hand, Game of Thrones, meme. You could assume that anyway.
It was the meme that came out, the save Sean Bean campaign. And it was, there was a big save Sean Bean, you know, let him live through at least one movie. And it was movie after movie after movie after movie after movie consecutively that he died in.
To be fair, though, he always played bad guys. That was a lot of the reason for that. Bad guys often die before the end.
But his good guys died, too.
Yeah. And Boromir was a good guy who had a bad moment and died.
Good guy.
Although he died redeeming himself.
He was a guy.
He died redeeming himself, though. Boromir was saving the hobbits and trying to let them run away while attacking the orcs.
He died better than he lived.
Wait, Sean Bean was in that movie?
He died. How could you forget that? Yeah, Fellowship of the Ring. He wasn't in the whole thing. He also died in the first movie. Always died in the first season. Did not die in Jupiter Ascending.
Did not. The although there were so many opportunities for him to.
He also didn't say you bastard. I was a little confused.
Although, I will say that Jupiter Ascending is the A-team of sci-fi movies. Lots and lots and lots of bullets. No casualties.
Yeah, I don't think we ever saw anybody get seriously hurt. At all, much less actually, you know, act like they've been hit by anything.
Well, except there was the Graylings.
I was going to say there was that one dragon, but he probably died off camera.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know. That first sequence where she fell and they went all over the place and destroyed a bunch of buildings and cars and stuff, they didn't explicitly show death, but I'm pretty sure people died.
Yeah, people died. I was watching that.
No one on camera.
This movie opens. I mean, and it's funny because when you're first watching the movie, and I'm really kind of curious about your impressions, and I want you each to kind of think about for a second what you want to talk about, because I haven't asked anybody what they thought of it yet, and I really, really want to know. This movie opens on Earth. It opens with a pretty mundane sort of like, you know, narrative about who I am, and this is my situation, and life is kind of lame, and then it all kind of unravels quickly. I mean, everything that happens really fast. And the next thing you know, layer after layer after layer of exposition is kind of dropped into place in a series of sequences. They don't ever, like, invalidate anything, but make you wonder if the plot is supposed to be deeper than it is, or if it's supposed to look deeper than it is, or what's going on there. I was watching the movie again. I mean, I've seen it before a couple times, but I was watching again in segments because I'm cutting the clips out. And again, I think the pacing suffers for me. One of the things I'm kind of curious about for you guys is in deconstructing the film is, did it feel like the whole thing moved as fast as it felt like it was trying to move? I mean, I didn't see a lot of downtime when there was kind of dumb things were said and then it would move back into the action. In fact, I had a hard time getting clips for this movie because there's so much damn action. I mean, you can, like, I caught a couple places where we got guns going just so I could show you guys the gun sound effects because I think they're cool. But other than that...
I have mixed feeling on some of the gun sound effects.
I understand. I just want to share them.
But there were some points in the early part of the movie, which was the part I remembered from before, and the later parts, I must have fallen asleep when I watched this originally. I must have had to have returned it like in 3 hours and fallen asleep and then just returned it and never watched the rest of it.
With you, does that say anything about it?
No, I feel stupid for having done that because it gets interesting after you hit the third of the way through, Mark. But there were a few slow parts near the beginning, but nothing, I think, after having watched it that I would cut out.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything extraneous, I could say.
Like, the build on Jupiter's character itself seemed a little bit slow because there were so many other characters that had so many more interesting things going on.
The bee house scene ran slow.
Which...
I liked that one, but it was still weird.
But it had so much stuff going on in it. Right, and it was an important downtime before everything went to hell again.
There was a character in that scene that I had completely forgotten existed after the first viewing.
The bumblebee?
No, Sean Bean had a daughter.
Yeah.
And she was like a pivotal point.
Was it Risa?
I don't remember. Was it Risa? And it was a pivotal point in his behavior later. But she disappeared like after about a minute of meeting her, and then we never saw her again, right?
Yep.
Well, there was a brief inclusion of her during the action sequence, but after that, yeah. Once they left that setting.
Right. Beyond being part of his art, she really wasn't required for the rest of the movie.
And clearly she was being left on Earth when we all went off into space and did our thing, which is fine. Yeah, I don't really mind the inclusion of characters that play an important role in the story that and then kind of drop out of sight because they're pivotal for some reason. But sometimes it can be a little jarring when you start thinking about how they try to make somebody important without them having any chance of being memorable. I don't know, kind of threw me a little bit. But I think I've run out of my criticisms. Right there. The music was good. I liked the music. The visuals were freaking believable. I loved the technology. The ships were awesome. The weird gravity-like stuff where the wings all kind of come apart and nothing's touching and junk and everything kind of reforms. That was innovative. I don't think we'd seen anything quite like that in science fiction. I think somebody had an original idea and we saw it. And that is, of course, again, Wachowski's, you know, probably bringing that out. People, maybe one of them had it, but who knows?
I had one problem with the visuals, and it wasn't a big problem. It wasn't enough to ruin anything, but anytime anyone was free falling, moving their arms and legs all around, it was kind of bad.
I caught that a couple of times.
Well, when
but
you're hanging by
really...
the wire. I see. As far as the movie goes, I get it.
Yeah, like the rest of the graphics were so well done, but if you're actually free falling, you're not going to be waving your arms and legs around a lot.
Oh, if I'm free falling, I'm going to try and flap my wings like as if there's a chance because I got to do
You're going to try, but the force of gravity is going to stop it.
Actually, it's air resistance at that point.
Well, yeah.
I don't know enough about the science. It seems real. Although one of my notes was for a movie called Jupiter Ascending, there's a whole lot of Jupiter descending.
Lame, but funny.
He's falling all the time.
Well, you do have a lot of characters with wings and abilities for flight, and she's human.
So are they.
He's technically not.
Well, not completely.
Well, let's touch on that a little bit.
But she fell for him, too.
But I'm
splices.
I love dogs.
That was cute.
I captured that line because Richard wanted me to.
You totally should have, yes.
The splices. Now, here's an interesting thing. I get the impression that we aren't talking about really alien culture at this point. I mean, some of them obviously are. The what do they call the gray ones?
They're from the Demeter.
The grays.
We call them grays.
Thought they had.
They were like the Watchers or something like that.
Keepers.
Keepers.
Yeah. Keepers.
I mean, they were obviously very alien. But a lot of the other people you saw could have been just splices, you know, had like animal style traits and stuff. And I thought that was a weird choice. I mean, I applaud them for not thinking we just have to have a bunch of weird looking, you know, people with different bumps on their head. But on the other hand, the concept here is that not only have humans developed everywhere or from somewhere else in the galaxy and eventually migrated to Earth, but other animals that we know have developed through the evolutionary ladder in our history have also somehow become genetic food for thought when they're, you know, trying to make people into better people or something. not entirely clear what's being accomplished here.
Oh, that is so far down on the list of this movie's inconsistencies.
Well, I'm not real good at inconsistencies.
See, I didn't find that many inconsistencies.
I didn't see that as an inconsistency.
Might have started to talk.
Okay, so let me start off by saying I had managed to avoid any spoilers regarding this movie whatsoever. I hadn't watched it because the title alone, Jupiter Ascending, did not interest me. I didn't know what it was supposed to be about. And 5 minutes into the movie, I thought it was going to be about a Russian immigrant who cleans people's houses.
10 minutes in the movie, they take pains to disillusion that.
I was actually quite astonished when we changed to a scene of this beautiful cityscape over a sprawling river with bridges that arc out over kind of across the river. And I looked at my wife and I was like, where is that? And she smiled at me.
Because she'd seen the movie, not yes. Because she was going past San Francisco.
She had seen the movie. And of course, Alien Planet. I was not prepared for that at that point. And from there, it's a whirlwind tour. After my first viewing, I couldn't call back anything specific because I was just, you know, shiny-eyed staring at the screen the entire rest of the movie going, oh, this is so beautiful. How did I not see this movie? I have a new science fiction favorite. I loved this movie, but there are so many things wrong with it. I can acknowledge all the things that are wrong with this movie, and there are a lot of them, but it's still one of my new science fiction favorites. This is just a fantastic film, and I don't know how anyone could not enjoy it. That being said,
my turn's coming up.
I'm sure you'll explain that to me in all kinds of detail, and we'll have a wonderful discussion about it. That being said, there were a lot of problems. The biggest one, though, for me, is the entire movie hinges on the fact that this girl is legally entitled to the property of this woman that died, the mother of this ruling business or whatever, because she is a genetic recurrence,
they call them.
Recurrence, thank you, of her. At the same time, the movie takes pains to explain to you that when humans were seeded on Earth 65 million years ago, they were genetically altered by splicing them with indigenous species, which makes the premise of the movie impossible.
Extremely unlikely.
Not necessarily. That's actually not a problem I have with it. By the time thousands and thousands of years of various gene combinations, it's possible you could get all one human. And then it also is very clear that what we call science or magic can be actually science, and that we don't understand anything of anything, and they understand everything of everything.
Ah, yes. The corollary to Clark's Law. Any magic or any technology not indistinguishable from magic is insufficiently advanced.
Exactly.
You mentioned the spaceships.
I did.
I absolutely loved it. I was pounding on things going, finally, they're doing it right. This is what I've been waiting for. Spaceships that look like alien spaceships. That is so cool. And then they do the fight in over the city with all the little, which, by the way, I have another problem with that scene, but they do the fight over the city with all the little fighter craft going after Wolf Dude.
Channing Tatum. Yeah.
And
I don't remember his character's name. It isn't important.
Kane. His name is Kane.
Okay.
Yeah. Kane Wise.
And I was just in awe because everything is working the way it physically should in this scene, given you understand how their technology is supposed to work. Whether that's realistic or not, we'll leave for, you know, actual scientists to debate, but it works the way that you think it should looking at it on the screen.
Right.
And I'm looking back at all these other epic science fiction fantasy movies that I've watched that I have just railed at how they don't understand how the physics are supposed to work. None of that should happen the way that you're seeing it. It's a huge breaker of suspension of disbelief for me. And in this movie, it's not.
Yeah,
I was so proud of them for that.
Didn't break disbelief with me. That's what, of course, I mean, right from the get-go, the way this is built around the whole you're a person with something greater, which of course is exactly what Jupiter Ascending means, but you'd have to know enough astrology to know that, but they do explain that right at the beginning of the movie.
More or less, yeah.
That she's meant for greater things because she was born with Jupiter Ascending. They are able to do this, the whole thing where the exposition is taking place, because while the main character Jupiter, is going through this, she doesn't understand what's going on and has to have it explained to her. That's how we get our exposition, instead of having to get exposition constantly broken to us by somebody saying stuff that nobody would actually sit down and explain.
Which is the other reason it's in little pieces, because people talk that way. You discuss what is specific to what you're talking about that time,
right,
and other information comes up as it becomes relevant. to explaining things to her.
I liked the way it built.
Favorite exposition ways of drawing it out is if you can have that main character going through the same exploration you are, that works for me. They don't suddenly learn things on their own and then it's explained from outside. They're getting it as we're getting it. We're getting it as they're getting it.
I love that. Kind of a trope too, like the everyman character is always the one that represents you, the reader or the viewer in the story, and she is ignorant of everything that's going on, just like you are when you're first watching the film. So you learn everything as she learns it. It's a very organic experience. I like the way things are written.
Natural.
Yeah, it was
well done in that way.
They even managed to do that in the scenes that didn't include her. The very first introductory scene on the alien planet that had just been harvested, where the three siblings are talking amongst themselves. That conversation feels natural. Nothing is forced. No one is having to explain things in agonizing detail that the two people they're talking to already know.
Right.
But yet they drop just enough information to answer a couple of questions and pose the questions that they're going to answer for you later. It was very well done.
Yeah, and the whole thing bringing up. So you have this small, insignificant planet. I was wondering if I could take that off your hands for you. What is it called? Something like Earth? And it's like, no, you know that planet's worth more than your whole.
Right.
And this so natural conversation of somebody trying to do a wheeling and dealing thing and coming up with this whole, this isn't important, why don't you just let me have it? It's like, there's no way I'm letting you have that.
Also establishing that we're talking about more than inheritance here, we're talking about business at some level. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's something greater is going on here. For some reason, the Earth is worth a lot to these people.
Oh, they even include the little piece of information that Mother named it Earth. And that one, I was getting all ready to jump on them. Oh, come on. She just happened to name it what we call it. Come to find out, no, we call it that because that's what she named it.
Right. That's the idea.
I've seen movies do that before, though. So
one of my jump ons, you know, you said, oh, come on. She just happened to name it that when they were going through things and they're like, oh, I hear it's 100% humane. And I'm like, I don't think humane is the right word for aliens.
I had that same reaction at that word, too.
That's a translator issue.
That's pretty good.
The meaning of the word, that's the word that means what they said.
Then later in the movie, she's like, we're human beings, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh, I guess they were. That is what they meant.
I mean, that also, of course, begs the question of the fact that everybody speaks English. So always a thing. Vanessa, what was your impression?
I thought it was a great movie.
You like it?
I super enjoyed it. The CGI was well done, aside for the falls. It was a well-built world. It was a well-built characters. Everything interacted well. Cinematography, phenomenal. Music, phenomenal. Everything was built to put me right in that moment exactly as it was happening, and it worked great.
Channing Tatum's abs, phenomenal.
There was like that whole scene without his shirt on, right?
His shirt on.
Well, by that one scene, I meant that, you know, 30-minute scene.
He Brented his way into Act Two. It never came back.
He did.
Took the shirt off to do a little bit of healing, and it never came back on.
It wasn't as bad as She's the Man, where he took his shirt off like every 10 minutes.
Because he only took it off once.
In this, it didn't feel forced. It felt natural. He took it off to treat an injury.
And then he never put it back on.
Somehow never put it back on.
Got into a fight. Yeah, they got into action.
I mean, you could totally forgive that, right?
Nipples a quiver.
Brilliant.
You know,
sorry, Vanessa.
If it isn't in all of his contracts, it probably should be, man.
Now, if only they'd done that for Jupiter.
Yeah, different rating on that.
That's a totally different film.
See, there's something wrong with the system at that point. I'm just gonna leave that there.
Well, I totally agree with that, but yeah, double standard on the nipples.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say tit for tat, but that sounds wrong now.
But I do,
coming from someone who's packing a pair of tats.
I do appreciate. God, you guys are awful. I do appreciate the visuals in this. The way that they kind of, I wish I'd seen it in the theater, I guess. And I,
me too. At this rate,
me three.
I'd really stayed awake, like, and watched it the first time.
Obviously, would have been a phenomenal theater film. More than anything, because the spectacle was so good that a lot of the stuff that you have issues with can easily be forgiven if you are enjoying the movie at that scale.
Yeah.
Unless you're my wife. But most of the time, not as, God, Jason is being so quiet over there. He's making me nervous.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to this.
Oh,
Okay, clean that up.
It was so painful. So horribly, horribly painful. It was trogging and slow and bureaucratic and capitalist. And it was a whole movie about the evils of business and greed and beauty. And sure, it was pretty. It was a pretty, pretty movie. But I couldn't care about any of the people. Everyone was awful. It was just one nasty thing after another. And the pacing and the shooting and the not hitting anything, but at the same time hitting everything.
Worse than stormtroopers.
They completely destroyed Chicago, but they couldn't hit a guy. And then they go, oh, we're going to fix everything. No one's going to remember anything. And if we do miss one or two people, no one will believe them.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That was one of those things.
So they completely say that all of these alien things are happening practically every day. That's what they're implying, is that this stuff is always going on, but they clean it up and fix it and wipe everybody. No, not that many people, not in this day and age, not with cameras. They didn't even take the picture off of her phone. If they didn't take the picture off of her phone, they're not getting the security cameras and all of the other footage. Too much.
I do have to apologize on the movie's behalf slightly here. Not a lot. Your point is extremely valid, and that got me too. But I definitely got the impression from the movie that it was exceedingly rare for a situation to get as out of hand as that one.
Yeah. Now, that was a crazy out of hand one, but just a little scene at the clinic where there was the four aliens,
mm-hmm.
that would have got caught on camera footage. The scene where they get ready to go into the Jupiter base with the ship teleports out of nowhere, sits right outside Jupiter, right outside the red spot, not the back half, the red spot that we stare at all day, every day, with thousands of telescopes and cameras across the globe.
I even commented. I was like, and nobody sees this?
We would know.
The Matrixness of that, I thought, was pretty heavy-handed. Because that was the thing with the Matrix, right? We live in a world where all this is going on, but we don't know it because we don't buy into it. We don't believe it. You know, we all live in the red pill world. So it's like,
but you can't use that as an excuse in this movie because it's not the Matrix.
No. I'm saying it's a conceit behind the design, not a consistency in the movie. Absolutely.
It seemed like more of a Men in Black feel to me.
Well, the whole make people forget.
With the flashy things.
Yeah, it did have a very Men in Black feel. And then they get the... So then bees are genetically designed to recognize royalty.
Oh my God,
that seemed like a bit of a stretch, but it was a character reveal.
It was a character reveal. Oh, look, she's the queen, and this is how we know why.
And it did make the run through the field a little more interesting when the bad guys are being attacked because they're affecting the person they feel the need without trying.
But since you bring up the fight in the field, I have to kind of rebuttal back at Jason again. The guy with the wave gun hit everything.
He hit him, but it didn't but it wasn't do anything.
They just throw people but around.
It didn't do anything.
I was just saying. I mean, his marksmanship was impeccable.
He did actually hit something.
Oh, my gosh.
Fair enough. He hit something, but it was completely and totally ineffective.
And my thought there was, wow, that weapon would be great for making crop circles.
Right. Oh, which exactly. we saw when the ship was.
Oh, and did we really need 30 minutes standing in line to verify the fact that she was the queen?
That goes back to the intrigue and bureaucracy to show the level of what's going on in that world and how all that information is required and lawyers make everything worse.
The bureaucratic montage.
If anything, I felt like that since they committed to going into that kind of detail to drive that point home, they should have done it more thoroughly. Because by the time she walks out of there after talking to that last guy in the process, she should have had to go back and do it all in reverse. But instead, no, she's just done.
Well, I got the feeling that they did go back in reverse and do that.
It was implied.
Although she should have went ahead and went the next step and got the guard. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, she could have used it. Jeez.
I don't know that it would have done her much good, seeing how effective the guards were for everyone else in the movie who actually had them.
I think it's really telling, though. And to be fair, I recognized that theme in the story, the whole one percenter theme.
Very much.
Corporate reality, treading on the little people without any thought for who they're hurting or any care for their as valuable members of their society in
just,
any way.
You know, taken to the logical extreme, if that's a right. universal
concept.
Profit
rolls downhill, profit rolls uphill. That's just the way it is, baby.
Yeah.
He's her cousin selling her eggs and taking 2/3 of the profit.
You don't treat your cousins like chickens. Love that line.
That so whole cringy. Sequence is so unnecessary in this story.
It is both cringy and unnecessary.
It's a metaphor.
But actually, it's perfectly necessary for the way that they tell the story, because it makes her that much angrier when the whole profit and harvesting people comes up. Because they use the same words. Do they have to call it harvesting? Do they have to call it harvesting? It's harvesting. Mm-hmm. It's life, and they're getting paid for it. It's life is currency, and profit rolls uphill and shit rolls downhill. It's all 100% on the level.
Kind of a cheap shot, though, to be honest. It's like so that they can use the same language. I mean, and draw much. A parallel. But the situations aren't that parallel. I mean, women don't harvest their eggs to rejuvenate themselves. They harvest their eggs so that they could continue to potentially have children later in life in case it seems like a bad idea at the time. This is selling eggs
for other purposes. This is harvesting for sake of consumption.
And that's what I was getting ready to say. Actually, it's harvesting potential future life for your personal profit in the now, which is exactly what the Abraxas is doing.
I can see that. Okay. I get the metaphor, and it is pretty on the nose. But I didn't like that particular sequence. I don't know if they could. I don't know if anybody could have written it better or anything. But the family was cool. They were funny.
And anybody else have any interest in Lord Fetish and his Gimp Army?
Which one was Lord Fetish?
Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, Balin.
I really liked his character. I'm not gonna lie.
But I. Everybody around him were in these little zippers, rubber suits and masks. And it was,
he didn't notice
him. So it shows that he's the more controlling person.
I didn't catch just how gimpy they were. That's interesting.
It was all a matter of showing the perspectives of these three. And then the bureaucracy showed the fact that the reason they're using so much intrigue with each other is because the bureaucracy holds all the power. If they don't follow the steps, dot their I's and cross their T's, they get nothing.
Mr. Knight, was he? You think he was supposed to be a splice? I don't. Maybe
he looked like he was a splice with a rat.
I was thinking too. Rat.
And he acted like a rat, and he was kind of weaselly and horrible, and so that was kind of.
I mean, it would make sense for Spy Network.
Mm-hmm. All that being said, I love the dragon guys.
Oh yeah,
they dragon were freaking cool.
Their voices.
Yeah, I caught one just for the voice. I captured one of those clips just for the voice. So good. Do you guys want me to get into clips? Do we have more to
say? Let's get into clips, because
everybody's kind of.
I just have one last thing to say, and then I'll be completely done.
Rain on the parade.
It was just the last negative thing I have to say is it was constant, almost death. She's almost going to die. Oh, we got rescued. 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 Over. And over and over. It was exhausting.
This one, I have to say, I heartfelt agreement with you, because by the second to last, and then especially, no, sorry, let me back up. By the fourth to the last, then especially the third to the last, then especially the second to last, and absolutely by the last time this happened, I was just like, this is way, way overdone. You guys have, that was what finally broke my suspension of disbelief. They pushed it too many times, too close to the line. And I was, you know, you could win the lottery 3 times and not have the kind of luck that this girl has to have to be alive at this point.
There was a lot of deus ex machina in there. I mean, it was very much part of the movie. I like the troping. I like that in the story. If things weren't just right, it would have turned out completely different for everybody.
Vanessa's
once
turning colors.
Awesome. Twice, baby.
3 times a lady. Time.
They had to have her almost die because they had to show how the three siblings were willing to get what they were trying to get out of her.
All different.
They all had their own goals. They all had their bureaucracy bull that they had to go through. they had to portray that depth.
But that shows the difference in the siblings too, because that's part of the intrigue, is following those paths of intrigue. And you have to know each player is coming with their own needs, desires, what they're willing to do to get what they want, what they're not
willing
to do. And
their own bag of tricks. Their own bag of,
and how that all plays out.
I have a different take on that, by the way, because the whole in distress thing is a big trigger point for me with stories, because I've written stories where, in the first time I did it, where I had a person who was a main character in one of my stories, and I had somebody beta reading the story, and they said, "Have you had this woman like rescued by somebody like three times now?" And I'm like, "That isn't the point. I mean, I hadn't seen it that way, but now that you mention it, and I have an issue with that." But in every situation here, we see a growth in character as a consequence of the experience as well.
Yes.
And I like that part.
Yes.
I feel like when she was, the first time we see her handling real well the sudden burst of action that she's thrown into, she saves the hyperventilating reaction until after it's over. That's great. It allows her to hang on when they're otherwise flying through the air. It allows her to, you know, keep her wits about her enough to not die before she freaks out. The second time, you got more of a, she's trying to keep some semblance of control of the situation. She's trying to keep her head, trying to make sure she understands what's happening. The third time, you have her, you see her trying to put her foot down on things and saying, okay, these are the terms that I find myself in. These are the things I know I can push back on. And then she starts pushing back even selflessly towards the end until her family's threatened.
Right.
The last time, she picks up a rebar and starts kicking ass. I mean, she plays her own strengths in that process, but she has to go through these situations where, again, unfortunately, the story has her consistently getting rescued again and again and pulled out of the mire. But I see real character growth in that, and I think it helps make the decision at the end of the story make more sense.
Right.
Yes.
That's the character growth was there.
But I'm just looking at it from that angle and saying, I hadn't really, until you mentioned it, Jason, I hadn't really thought about that tendency to be the damsel in distress again and again and again and again in the story, which does bug
the piss. If the character growth had not been there, I would have had a huge problem with that.
So the character growth is, I'm okay with cleaning toilets?
At the end, that whether or not I'm cleaning toilets isn't what's important. Intro.
Technically speaking, I'm an alien. And from the perspective of immigration, an illegal one. My parents met at the university in St. Petersburg, where he taught astrophysics and she taught applied mathematics. My mother fell in love with him and she found him almost frozen to death on the bank of the Neva, staring at the stars.
So a little bit of whatever. It's got a kind of a squishy quality to it. But I did love the
double play on aliens. I mean, at first it made me wonder if they meant aliens, and then I realized they meant she had come from Russia and left to another country without actual permission.
You know, once I started putting bits of the plot together, after we knew there were actual aliens and she's gene marked and they're hunting her, I started thinking that that's exactly what this was. She's, the reveal is she's a changeling. She's an alien baby. And for some reason, you know, they were trying to hide her. Someone's trying to protect her.
You know,
someone's
trying to kill her. Her dad may have been.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Off
exactly. Because he died before we had a chance to find out, you know.
Could have been, for all we know. That may explain the whole genetics thing.
Maybe that's why he was obsessed with Jupiter.
Speaking of which.
But I was born in the house of Leah.
Roshka, I thought you'd be there.
With Jupiter rising at 23 degrees ascendant. Roshka. According to my aunt, this is supposed to mean that I'm destined for great things.
So, you had to get the name of the movie in there in a way. I thought that was okay. Whatever.
Well, but
man, the House of
Leo,
credits.
Leos tend to be leaders, yada, 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 and all that stuff. So
don't get me started on the Leos that I know.
My birthday's in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Meet the fam.
The House of Abrasis continues to thrive despite the squandering of your inheritance, brother.
I could just listen to him for an hour, and I think I'd really enjoy the experience.
His voice is weirdly soothing in every role he's ever been in.
I like watching him in this movie, though. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted the clip here.
The House of Abrasis continues to thrive despite the squandering of your inheritance, brother.
I must say, looking a little worse for wear. Could it be success does not agree with you?
And you look so well. Could it be that failure agrees with you?
Burn.
Yeah, that did a lot of damage.
Have we noticed yet kind of a pattern here in that, like, something about the clips all sounds the same because it's got the same freaking styling and music in the background, almost like it's the replacement for the Constantine ambient noise.
I was going to say, that's what it reminds me of since we just did that a week ago. I'm like, there's that background noise again.
Pre-show is like, you mentioned the musician, the person who did the writing of the music, and I'm like, I don't even think I noticed music. Oh yeah, I guess it was there. I remember nothing of it.
Music in this one was way better than Constantine.
I agree. So yeah,
it was definitely supportive.
I'm sure I have more.
I mean, I noticed it.
More melancholy clips for you. But speaking of the music, how about a maid montage?
Make a coffee. Come on. Stop by.
I hate my life.
Okay, enough of that.
40-45, we get it. Your life sucks.
At that point, I was actually starting to feel like, what am I in for? Do I have to finish watching this?
Well, yeah. And how far are you into the movie at this point? Like 4 minutes?
Five-ish, yeah.
Gun sounds. I just don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Reminds me of Star Wars blasters.
Yeah, it was like variations on blasters, but then there were always little cartoony sounds to all the sounds. And they were like, five different blaster sounds repeated ad nauseum.
I think that was more slug thrower style weapons, though, right?
A lot of it, yeah. But I was going to say, taken away from the visuals and listening to that,
it sounds more like a blaster.
Well, and I mean, keep in mind, people only know what laser weapons are supposed to sound like because of Star Wars.
True story.
Do you need to hear it again?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just like, you guys seem to have an opinion.
No, I had enough.
Oh, there was enough gun sounds in that movie. They fired a billion bullets.
But I have no idea what to call it.
All of the scenery.
But the big purple charge-up gun on the little one-man fighters in the city, the thing that knocked over that entire tower, that thing sounded awesome. That did not sound like something I had heard from other sci-fi movies. I was like, oh.
By the time we were into the action sequence, I wasn't thinking about trying to catch a clip. I mean, it's like, oh, what would be the point?
Oh, not stopping now. Not stop.
It all kind of sounds like a mess. Speaking of noises, Alien. That's the keepers, I think. Everything all right? That's when she's in the closet, right? Like she takes a picture or something, they nab her.
Right.
Yeah.
Because she wrote down.
I liked the bounty hunters, too.
She wrote down a bad name.
I just like that. I love it. I thought they sounded interesting. I like them. Very alien.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Definitely.
Kane lays it down. Here we go.
It can be difficult for Terses or people from underdeveloped worlds to hear that their planet is not the only inhabited planet in the verse.
Has to be the anesthesia. I mean, it's got to be a dream.
The protocol actually says that most Terses will say that this has to be a dream.
Okay, that's cute. You guys are not exactly so exuberant about these lines.
Wait.
There's nothing to be exuberant about, Eric.
I want to kind of deconstruct that slur just a little bit, though, because until just now when I heard that again, I missed on my second watch through. I assumed Tercy was supposed to be a slur for a Terran or a terrestrial.
Right.
But he says he says it like it's a slur for people from underdeveloped worlds, plural, which we have to assume there are thousands of these seeded harvestable worlds out there. So what is it actually supposed to be short for, I wonder?
Well, now that you mention it, the next clip, no, I have no idea.
I think you're kind of right. But the fact that it's underdeveloped terrestrial, it's people that are stuck on their planet.
Ground pounders. That makes sense.
I can see that. That's pretty good.
Nicely deduced, sir.
A fairy tale.
You know, my mom says that love is just a fairy tale for little girls. That really it's all just urges and obligations.
Wow. It's kind of harsh.
So she was talking to Catherine before the closet nap. I think I got those turned around.
That was the very jaded beginning of Jupiter.
She stayed pretty jaded.
She tried.
She still ended up in love. She did not stay jaded.
Yeah, Channing Tatum.
I've been trying to think of...
He's not that good looking.
Yeah.
Especially in this. They did... He's a good looking man, and they did everything in their power to make him unattractive. Not.
Yeah,
except for his chest.
He wasn't a terribly sexualized character having all of his being half clothed in most of the show, so I thought that was all right. But who knows exactly what they're going for? I mean, it's a PG-13 movie. They could have pushed sensuality a little bit if they'd wanted to, just fine. But I feel like they're going. Yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah. Violence, I guess. I don't know.
But with space orgies and...
The orgy was implied. IMDb covered that, too, and they said, you know, there were women there implying an orgy, but...
Yeah, you didn't see anything. You saw skin, but not anything overt, and, I mean, the only nipples in the show were Channing's, so...
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess. Sure. Yeah.
You didn't even see that the sister's ass when she was coming out of the rejuve pool.
You get to see all of the siblings' asses.
Briefly.
All that ass.
I don't know.
Eddie Redmayne walked pretty slow out of that pool.
I apparently wasn't paying that close of attention.
Which I will say, the one thing I did think that was kind of clever about that was in the first scene that we met the siblings and they all said how horrible he looked. He had the gray temples and had kind of wrinkles. And then the next thing you see him is he's walking out of the bath. And when he goes down in the parade on Jupiter,
he's rejuvenated. He looks
young again.
Yeah, he's rejuvenated. I can't help but go back to, like, you remember that game that Nero ran? That was kind of,
I actually thought about that game. People drinking the shakes made out of kids.
I think it was inspired by this. I think if we asked her, we'd find that it was inspired by Jupiter Ascending. I bet you anything, because that's too easy a metaphor right there. Too good. But yeah, I was really kind of, okay. Let's go back to one of the things you said before we got into clips. I got a handful more. But you mentioned, Jason, that the characters were pretty unlikable and you didn't like any.
Everyone was terrible.
Everyone was terrible.
Everyone's supposed to be terrible.
I really have to feel like, in retrospect, I can't disagree with that. I really can't. There's not really anything super one way or the other, right? I mean, I feel like they were going for flawed characters or characters that needed growth and then didn't do enough with it. And so, I mean, the most likable character in the show to me was kind of the captain of the Aegis ship.
I was actually just thinking about her when we were talking. It's like, wait, okay, there was one person. She was cool. She was doing her job. She was just doing the things that she needed to do. And on the record, I have to tell you, don't do this thing.
Right.
Off the record, you are a man of rare courage, and I hope your aim is true. I dug her. And she also promised to give him every second she could, and she's going to give him every second she could.
And still did her duty.
She was cool. Everybody else was a,
I cannot think of another person that was terribly likable. I mean,
well, Jupiter
was hard to care too much about her personality one way or the other. She seemed so mundane somehow. And I will go on record saying that if there's any weak performance in the movie, in my opinion, it's Mila Kunis's, because I don't feel like she could carry this scope of a story on her shoulders.
I can't think of anyone that would have been able to do it better, though.
She's female Keanu-ing it.
Maybe. I mean, I get what you're saying. That sort of like wooden kind of performance that he's kind of famous for. And again, in that everyman kind of role where you try to put yourself in that position of experiencing what she's experiencing. But the character wasn't written dynamically enough. So what it really needed was an actor who could use what was on the page and make it come to life a little better. You know, have it matter. She pulled off stuff like resigned really well, confused really well, pensive really well. Those were her three moods in the whole game, in the whole movie.
Her character was a mannequin and she acted that way. It was,
but
she did a great job for what she was given.
Again, I'm saying that and I thoroughly enjoyed the film. Jason is saying that and I don't think he did.
Not even a little bit.
Not it's going to be a brown coat situation.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
A little history.
So, you've been taught that the birthplace of the human race is Earth, but it's not. It's actually a planet in the Cannabulum system called Orus, a little over a billion of your years ago. Your planet was discovered during what is commonly called the Great Expansion. At the time, Earth was inhabited by a branch species of Saurosapien, a dangerous human predator called Sargon. Obviously, before any colonization or resource development could be done safely to your planet, a large-scale extinction event was meant. Damn budgie cuts.
I had to keep going because I loved his little comment there at the very end, which was very, very Sean Bean.
Budget cuts.
Up to that point, I like his delivery so much. You know, he's definitely the most seasoned actor in this mess.
And it shows.
But he really brought it home. I wish his character had been more interesting. You know, his character definitely suffered from being that guy who's part of the story and
part B.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know that the reason they didn't make him more interesting is because he was going to betray them, you know, and.
And see, watching guy, it, but, I assumed they didn't make him more interesting because he was going to die because it was Sean Bean.
Right, right.
But we came into it, we were introduced to him. He had previously been betrayed. Now he does the betraying, all this back and forth. It pretty much shows the people in the middle just doing their jobs. And they don't have a lot of power to control what's going on in their world.
Best explanation for dinosaur extinction I've ever heard, though.
True.
I can't argue with that. That's pretty good.
And to kind of just slightly touch on your comment, Jason, I actually like movies where all the characters are unlikable because that way I don't have to be invested in anyone enough to care when something terrible happens to them. And
that's a really horrible experience.
They can still drive a fascinating story that I really enjoy where everyone gets screwed and everyone dies.
Oh, yeah. And, we should talk about the Umbrella Academy.
that might be why I was thinking along these lines. Might be.
I haven't watched the new season yet. No spoilers.
Episode, no spoilers. I've only watched the first episode, and I realize I have to go back and watch last season again because I don't remember who anyone is.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing.
But it's a good example.
Watched it recently.
It's a good example of characters who are largely unlikable and a great freaking story.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, those characters are deeply flawed. Deeply flawed.
There is a difference between deeply flawed and completely unlikable.
Oh, not completely. I don't think the characters in this are completely unlikable.
And I guess that's where we differ.
Yeah. Well, we figured that out about 3 minutes into the show, sir. The faces you were making when other people were talking about them.
I liked the dragon dude.
Now, on the kid's point, though, I'm okay with some, if not most, horrible characters. Especially if they get their comeuppance. I love it when bad guys get their comeuppance or when they have a redemption arc that seems reasonable. I dig that. That makes me happy. But sure. I need at least one character to make me want to get to the end of the movie.
And this movie didn't give you anyone to do that with.
Anyone.
All that made him want to get to the end movie was that he has a show where he gets to talk about it for an hour.
let me rephrase that. The only reason I got to the end of the movie is because I had a show that I had to talk about it on.
Had to talk about it. That's different than I phrased it, I'll have you notice. I said get to talk about it.
Okay, I do get to talk about it, but I wouldn't, if the show wasn't an assignment.
Yeah.
If I had tried to watch it just because I wanted to try to watch it, it would have gone off about the hour 15 mark.
I'm glad you're invested in this because I feel like I'm going to be forcing you to watch a lot of stuff that you're going to have bad reaction to.
I'm fine with that. I don't mind being the voice of dissent.
You are the guy that said you don't like Firefly and you forced yourself to watch the whole season because every episode you're waiting to see what it is that people loved about the show so
eventually
much.
Eventually, it still has to get better.
Watched it.
Wait, you don't. You don't like Firefly?
Oh, I forgot he's been gone for the last freaking decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What was that brown coat comment earlier?
Oh, yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you not like anything?
I don't want to tank our ratings third episode in, guys. Okay.
There was a YouTube video that was a compilation, and it was entitled Firefly's Best Moments, and it was about 18 minutes long, and I think that was perfect.
You and I can discuss this another time. We're still on the air here.
Well, you know, what do we say? When you start talking about something else a bunch, you know, you got a winner on your hands.
Oh, man.
But at least we got into the movie pretty quick on this one. Because most of us enjoyed the shit out of it. Yeah.
Right.
The one character that I enjoyed more than any other character was the worst person. So I can't say much. And that was Balaam. Eddie Redmayne's character, he did so well with it.
He had probably just about the best arc, too, because he was, villain, you get to the end of the show and he gets his in a big way, but he keeps on trying until he does.
He was definitely the worst.
I
have no issue with that. And he was a great villain, and I appreciate great villains. In fact, in a lot of shows, I root for villains, and I love the villains. You know, they're sometimes my favorite character.
What I think about Eddie Redmayne, though, is I really want to see what he's doing in 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
I think he's amazing. I think he's got amazing potential, and I want to see what he'll be like as a seasoned actor who has a lot more experience with different kinds of roles, different kinds of challenges, different kinds of directors.
There was one thing that ruined his character for me in this movie, and that was the tendency that he had, to go through the entire movie talking like this until he decided to do this instead.
Yeah, I captured one of those.
But I did really enjoy the fact that all the characters were unique. They weren't like this.
That's
character
hard to
slightly
argue
adjusted. This character slightly adjusted. Each character came with their own goals and motives, and they were clear on what their motives were without odd, annoying exposition to get there.
Ooh, I have to point this out too, because I'm not sure everyone caught it. I missed it my first time through. Do you guys realize that of the three siblings, the sister actually won?
I think I caught that.
Whoa.
Huh. Which I was kind of rooting for anyway.
What was her ultimate goal? Because I apparently missed that.
All of their ultimate goals was a bigger share of business than their sibling.
Her goal was to use Jupiter to ruin her brothers. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay.
She didn't want to kill her.
Because if Jupiter
she willingly
got Earth,
turned her
it took
over.
Power away from him. Okay, mm-hmm. Yep, I gotcha.
I might have to leave the dead air of confusion in there on that one. just because you guys mentioned this earlier, real quick, just to kind of finish it up.
What is with this Your Majesty thing?
You've never been stung by a bee, have you?
No.
No, bees are genetically designed to recognize royalty.
Royalty.
His eyes are crossing.
You are in for a surprise when you find out what I do for a living.
That was might have been her best line, and the right after the worst line in the movie,
and it was so well delivered too.
You had to be wondering when Sean saw that line in the script. Is there a better way to say this? Just curious.
Can we get someone else to say it for me? This is bad.
Can I include the word bad. Bastard?
When we got excited, I was doing sound effects and stuff. I missed this one. I'm kind of sad. Dragon dude.
The keepers trace the prince to a medical clinic. They're eliminating every lead. We have a name. Dunleavy. Catherine Dunleavy.
I want that guy at more parties.
Dude, that voice. Oh.
Yeah.
By the way, this is how I'm going to envision Dragonborn from now on.
Oh. Much cooler than what we get, that's for sure. Although the wing thing, they don't usually have wings, do they?
No, they don't normally have wings. Or if they do, they're non-functional.
Because what matters to the fiction of our movie listening audience is what things look like in Dungeons and Dragons.
D&D.
Resources? Anybody?
In your world, people are used to fighting for resources. Like oil or minerals or land. When you have access to the vastness of space, you realize there's only one resource worth fighting over. Even killing for. More time.
Did I use that as my opener?
No, yeah. But you should have.
Yes.
Wait, that was your opener?
That was the opener.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it was the stakes.
It's pivotal. It is, yeah, it's what we're after here.
Oh, all mean, of that.
To be fair, modern society is pretty much all about time because social media spends all of its time trying to get you to spend your time on them so they could pay other people to get your time.
Yep.
Get paid.
One of Richard's favorite lines.
You are royalty now. I'm a splice. You don't understand what that means, but I have more in common with a dog than I have with you.
I love dogs. I've always loved dogs.
I love the way after he leaves the room, she's standing there freaking kicking herself for that line.
Why did I say that?
Dogs?
Yep.
I was like, I could have said the best thing ever, and that's what came out of my mouth.
Jason, even you have to admit that scene was well done.
Oh, that was a great line. That was a great line.
I'm going to skip through a couple of these because they're just not necessary. And I feel like I'm torturing poor Jason having to relive the
movie. I'm fine. I'm fine. That's what I'm here for.
Titus.
Lies are necessity. They are the source of meaning, of belief and hope. Honestly, lies are sometimes the only reason I get out of bed.
I think as a character study, the Wachowskis do a few things really well. And one of them is
I wanted him to die.
They often distill the actual nature of a character down into one very short monologue. They did it with Smith in The Matrix really nicely.
And then they ruined it.
Yeah, they do that. They do that too. After all, they did the other two Matrix movies too.
And
this was Titus's line. I didn't catch exactly the one you were looking for, Rich. I caught the one right before it. I screwed that up. But here's the chicken.
You did what? Shame on you.
Wait, 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 wait. You're telling me you convinced your cousin to sell her eggs? Oh. Yeah? What the hell do you think she is? A goddamn chicken?
She wanted to do it.
That was the best line, best scene with the family total right there.
Right. No, I love that. And then they got the other part. Like, I don't care what you want. You don't treat your cousins like chickens.
No, but this guy treats them like slaves. The previous scene, he was a horrible, nasty, abusive man who was taking advantage of the fact that they were illegal aliens and overworking them to the bone, giving them bare minimum housing, sharing a room with a curtain. It was horrible. And now all of a sudden he's going to beat the cousin with a shoe because he...
Evidently, it's okay to treat your family like indentured servants, but it is not okay to treat them like livestock.
He's there the head of a household, not... Yeah.
He's not their landlord.
I have the resources. I'm the head of the household. Like shit,
you can't. Got it.
I do this.
I think they were trying to establish a stereotypical family structure for a displaced illegal immigrant family.
Exactly.
To me, it just said there's a line and some things cross it and some things don't. Indentured servitude doesn't cross the line. This guy's personal line. Treating them like chicken crosses the line.
Because he, with limited resources, he was trying to take care of his family, and he did so very tightly because he knew he had limited resources and still wanted to be the head of the household.
I think that's the feel that it was actually trying to go for, was a head of the household, not trying to screw any one person over for anyone else.
I think I can agree with that. Jason, on the other hand, he started twitching in one eye. This clip was called Going to Kill Them. Not sure what, I don't remember. Okay.
Your Majesty, I could not even consider such an abhorrent crime.
He's lying.
You wound me, Mr. Wise.
If I were trying to wound you, Mr. Knight, you wouldn't be breathing.
If it makes everyone feel warm and cozy, the Aegis is welcome to follow us.
No. She won't be going anywhere with you.
So I don't know what I was calling it that for. I probably just captured it for the Dragon Guy's voice.
A lot of good voices, though.
Not complaining. Yeah.
Mr. Knight was kind of cool, too. I mean, for what he was, Toady kind of character. Thought they'd do all right with him.
He was a good Smee.
Not yo. Oh, good call. Smee? Don't try to stop me, Smee. Try to stop me, Smee. Create life. There we go.
I create life!
Ouch. Sorry.
And I destroy.
Again, is that better? Like you said, he whispers and then yells. Whisper scream.
Kind of a Voldemort feel to it.
He was kind of a Voldemort character.
Yeah,
that's true.
All he was missing was that he wasn't missing a nose. I mean,
yeah,
this was Gravhole and this was Stockworks. This was I liked the terminology. This stuff a little kind of technobabbly.
Hold on this.
What's up?
I was going to say, hold on, because just before we get to that is actually the thing that I most wanted to comment on in the whole movie. It was astounding to me, actually, because up until then, the movie has done a really good job of meeting my tropic expectations. You know, you put the pressure on this, you get this result. So when he is threatening her with the murder, torture, and death of her family and herself, and she finally says, no, you can kill us, but no. I did not see that coming. I expected her to fold like a stack of cards and get rescued. And I was really...
That's what I was talking about.
Really... That was a pivotal part of the moment for me. That was when I decided that I didn't like this movie. I love this movie.
So instead she said no and got rescued.
And got rescued. Yeah, made it all completely pointless and moot because rescued, you know. Well, DSX spliced hybrid wolf guide to the rescue. But still, she did it. And she didn't know she was going to get rescued. Admittedly, she would have had a basis for solid expectation by that point because it kept happening up until then.
Oh. Yeah. Gravhole and Stockworks.
Pardon, my lord.
Mr. Knight.
It is an emergency. The Gravhole is ruptured. The gas is reacting to the Stockworks.
I just thought the language was kind of cool. Yeah. The closest we get to technobabble. They don't try to explain their technology in this beyond the premise that is needed for the evil plot.
It's not really necessary
I know. I think that's one of the things that makes it work. Which, again, makes me feel like they're trying to land somewhere between The Matrix and Star Wars with this.
I did like the line that she's like, that technology is amazing. We should share it with the world. He's like, humanity isn't really good about sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that was a little on the nose.
But again, that's also as much as I like the line, it did feel like a heavy-handed civics lesson, beating you over the head with the 1% trope and the capitalist trope and the greed trope. And just, okay, I get it.
Only clip I have left is at the end, from the end.
Yes, you can say my fame is complicated the way the most famous are complicated.
You think you'll ever tell them?
What, that I own the earth? Are you kidding me? They'd have me locked up. And I wouldn't blame them either. Besides, I'm still trying to understand exactly what it means to myself.
And I think that's actually where the momentum in the movie was lost. It blew itself out before the end, trying to be homey and content with the ending of the film, and paint a picture of her that's wiser and more worldly.
I think this one was supposed to have sequels and such, though, that just didn't pan out, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because it bombed.
It bombed. It did. SpongeBob.
It wasn't his fault. It was theirs. But
I did take the liberty of checking to see what Rotten Tomatoes had to say about this movie, and I was aghast. I did not realize how unpopular this movie was after watching it and falling in love with it. Yeah. I was like, really?
Oh, there's the thing.
That's why I haven't seen it up until now. It got terrible reviews.
There's the thing, too. Like I said, I didn't see it in the theater. And I don't remember, what did I say, this was 2015? February 2015. I don't know where we were in terms of like watching movies. But most of the time, I'm one of those people who every movie that I really want to see in the theater, I find a way to see in the theater. You know, now over the years, as I've had no money, that's become a smaller list because I can be more intelligent about it. But for the most part, I'm not uber selective. This is the kind of movie where I think that I would have wanted to see it. So I'm not sure if the marketing wasn't good or what, but if it bombed badly enough at the theater the first time, I don't think it would have been because of bad marketing. It has to be word getting around, but opening weekend sucked. And that has got nothing to do with people's reaction to the movie.
Yeah.
You know,
you didn't have people lining up to go see the movie when it hit the theaters.
Right.
And that is so absolutely
when you say it's not
marketing.
SpongeBob's fault, I realize that's a little tongue in cheek, but the truth is, it had to be kinda. And to be fair, February is actually, I mean, that's Valentine's weekend. It should have had, or it was a weekend before.
That added to the perception. See, the movie poster to me looked like a romance, not like a sci-fi.
And maybe that's part of the problem. If they misinterpreted how they should represent the movie, not
the marketing was bad.
But if the marketing was bad, that would have explained a lot about it. And then the handful of people that do go to see it have the chance to tell everybody that they didn't like it. And so when opening weekend sucks, it's not going to make
Thanks,
money.
My people went and saw it. Your people didn't. My people talked about it. Then your people said, oh, never mind.
Right. And that happens. And again, I didn't see it in the theater. And I think after having seen it, that this is a movie that I would have, if the marketing had been on point,
loved it.
Taken pains to go watch.
Oh, yeah.
I probably would have been happier with it in a theater because then at least I would have been able to enjoy the immersive gritty and I wouldn't have had the ability to turn it off and walk away. You know, having the remote control sitting right there and knowing that I could, if I wanted to, stop it sometimes makes it harder.
I want to go ahead and push through here because we're running kind of long. So let's go ahead and do thumbs up, thumbs down. Rich, you want to get it started?
Yes. On my thumbs up, I honestly, as I love this movie, my big thing is I don't like will they, won't they plot lines. But in this one, they had that going on where you're like, are they going to do it or are they not going to do it? But it played less on teasy and more on actual character challenges. I really enjoyed the way that played out, and it added to the story rather than just filling it with expectations. On my thumbs down, this is more a me thing, but I don't like injection visuals.
Sure, yeah.
There were several scenes, because we're dealing with genetics, where there were injection visuals,
imagery,
because they were doing the whole extraction. And it put me off. It made me cover my eyes and pulled me out of the scene for a second. But they were completely plot appropriate. But I really love this movie. And if I had to come up with a thumbs down, that's going to be my thumbs down. Good.
I will say that as far as the romantic, The chemistry, I did not. That's one of the things I thought the movie really
it wasn't heavy chemistry, really but I wasn't on. In it for a romance.
And again, I feel like that was Mila. I don't know why. And I don't know. I mean, Channing's range may not be what it seems. The guy, most of the stuff I've seen him in, he's been really solid. This character seemed a little ephemeral to me. But the romantic angle there, it didn't feel forced. It felt kind of non-existent. You know, it was a little bit of, oh, you keep saving me and you're the one person in the galaxy who actually looks me in the eye or something. So I'm going to give my heart to you. Well, I felt it worked better
than most. And it didn't string me along, which is the thing I hate about Will They, Won't They. Every time they said, no, I can't, it was, I can't because this is a genuine thing and this is a genuine thing. And that's where I was at on that. So overall, my rating... I'm giving this 5 stars. I'm throwing my 5-star out there. It's because after watching this, if I had a choice to sit down to watch this or The Fifth Element, I would choose Jupiter Ascending.
Jason just threw up a little inside.
And that's what made me go with 5 stars.
Vanessa?
Give me a second. Yeah.
Holy crap.
That was my measuring stick.
It was good.
Okay, so as far as thumbs up, CGI was well done. Everything was well integrated. We had well-developed worlds, well-built characters. There was character development. Most of it was in characters that weren't necessarily the main characters, but it was still there. Well-built characters. I enjoyed it. We had well-built bad guys, guys you wanted to hate. Thumbs down. Still didn't like the falling sequences. It broke immersion for me every single time that she was falling. And the damsel in distress, just there was character development in it, and that kind of saved it, but it's still a thumbs down. Still overall a 5-star rating for me, though.
Oh, wow. Jason, yeah. You got your work cut out for you on this one. What do you got?
Thumbs up, eye candy. The movie was beautiful. Everything about the movie was beautiful. The buildings were beautiful. The scenes were beautiful. The characters were beautiful. The nakedness was beautiful.
They worthy of the Wachowskis.
It was pretty. It was such a pretty, pretty movie. Thumbs down, everything else. I 2 stars.
Well, that's better than one.
It was pretty. It was really, really pretty. At least there was something to enjoy. I couldn't give it a 1, but I will not recommend this film to anybody. And if anybody says, hey, I haven't seen this, should I? I'm going to say no.
Gotcha.
It's Kid. Not a good movie, in my opinion.
Well, and you're definitely entitled to your opinion. I'd love to fight you for it, but that's another day. I'm going to make this real quick. I'm going to focus on a couple of very specific details. My thumbs up is the boots.
Yes.
Those gravity surfing boots may be the coolest science fiction gizmo I've ever seen. I want them.
I thought they were one of the lamest science fiction gizmos I'd ever seen.
It was so well done. They so did not disappoint me with that. I see these little things in movies all the time, you know, where they have these little gizmos and they just haven't paid enough attention to the
physics.
Real life
flying with
how
rules.
It would work. Right.
Yeah. Good call.
But even the way he summarized it when she was like, I heard gravity and surf. He's like, up is hard, down is easy. I loved the boots. Thumbs down. Jupiter was an unreliable narrator. She lied to us. She told us that she always sees the worst in people and then spent the whole movie falling for every goddamn thing anyone told her.
Or am I lying?
Oh, wow. My God.
Wow.
There's some truth in that. There is some truth.
You are not wrong.
So my final rating is 4 stars, a solid 4 stars. I'd love to give it 5, but there were so many problems with this movie, and some of them were things I just could not ignore as much as I loved it.
All right. Richard, I give it 5 stars. What do you got on the total?
That is, it averages a little over 4, so it's a 4-star rating.
I think it was a good experience. I'm glad we watched it. I hope everybody else at least enjoyed that fact. But Jason, thank you for putting up with it. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure there will be more.
All right. Next week.
Yeah.
Big Fish.
Big Fish.
Big Fish.
Big Fish. I believe it's on. Fish. I think it's on Amazon Prime. It's our. We've actually hit a different service each week.
I enjoyed it last time.
I think that one was Prime. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we might always find these on more than one service, of course, but that I think that's where I notated it anyway. Found it on. So make sure you join us for that. Watch the movie if you want to ahead of time. kind of get ready with us and join us next week for Big Fish for episode 4. Well, thank everybody for joining me today. Rich, Vanessa, Jason, the kid. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here for this week. Thank you guys a ton. If you guys want to be part of the conversation anyway, be sure to drop us a line. Feedback at prismatictsunami.com is the email address. Of course, we have a Discord channel. You'll find that in the show notes as well. Drop in there and kind of talk to us a little bit. It's all brand new, and we're loving it. We'll see you guys then.